Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are into a hockey month. Welcome into Sabres Live. We are, yes, throw those hands up in the air, Marty Baron. We are 10 days away from the Prospects Challenge first game for Buffalo.
Allegedly.
Are you suggesting schedule changes could still happen?
Some people would say there's 9 days in between, so we're 9 days away. I'm like, you know how that is. When you argue you count the day you're in? Is it starting tomorrow? Is the day that is playing being considered? So allegedly it's 10 days away. I'm with you. Oh. But there's some people that will argue that it's not.
I sensed you were going to be combative, so I'm glad you're with me right off the hop here. We'll get to another team within the framework of Sabres Live today that sports similar colors, not all the time, but they will be our team of the day. We'll let you guess who that is. But speaking of team colors and the different looks we will see from the Sabres this year, well, single game tickets are on sale now. Go to sabres.com, find out all the information. And beyond opening night, where they will host the Rangers on October 9th, and allegedly will be in blue and gold, the following Thursdays will typically be black and red as part of the black and red schedule that is out now. So yeah, a lot of throwback Thursdays, seven of them in fact, where the team will sport black and red. And over the course of the entire season, 15 home games where they are going with that look. Again, all the information at sabres.com.
So this is great for me, my planning, you know, because I like to, like, we wear the pins, right, on the broadcast, and I like to know, do I have to wear the blue and gold pin, the black and red goat head pin, whatnot. So basically, every Thursday home game this season is going to be a black and red other than the home opener, which is very easy for planning. And then the other ones, then I put a little asterisk next to my to the game on my calendar so that I know, oh, it's a black and red. But 15 of them all together, it's great. Fans love the, you know, the throwback. And now we know that every Thursday night there's going to be that type of energy, the throwback Thursdays. You know, we know weekend games are great. There's a lot of energy in the building. But to be able to get that energy every Thursday night that the Sabres are going to play at home, I like that idea of going to throwback Thursdays. I think we should embrace that and, you know, go with some throwback trivia and all of that, right, when we get ready for it, because I think that's a great way to engage with fans, and we're gonna make the best out of those seven throwback Thursdays this year for sure.
Well, a few years back when they committed to black and red once again, you and I and many others found ourselves, even in warm-ups, but certainly in game situations, looking out and seeing players wearing black and red and getting reminded of the players that wore those numbers back, yes, in black and red prior. Has that worn off for you now?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. That is not like that anymore. I don't think of the late 90s and early 2000 anymore when I see the black and red. Number one, they are a little different. They're crisp. The logo's got that red around it. It's a little bit subtle changes, but no, I'm not looking at the numbers anymore and think, oh, here's, you know, I
remember Sanderson or whoever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. Like
Brian Holzinger.
Yeah. I had Holzinger. I had Tim Connolly. I had Taylor Pyatt. I had JP Dumont. I had all of them right in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris Drury, whatnot. So I think that I now 2 years later, I'm completely moved on from that. Now there is always that one time where I'm like, oh, I got to make that note because I want to go look at a stat that this player wearing the same jersey number, mm-hmm, did, and trying to find some similarities with it. But I'm not My mind has evolved and graduated to the new look as opposed to living in the past and going to, oh, like this reminds me of that player that played in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Well,
do you Duffer? Do you feel like you're...
I mean, unless somebody with a new number this year, you know, jumps in that we haven't, you know, looked at before, like maybe it's Doan or whoever. Like, I think there's always the possibility, right?
Yes.
And that's, I don't know. Those are just the kind of little added bonuses to game nights. If you're...
And it has
if your eyes are open and your ears are open.
A special number to like a special player, too. Like, if you have 27 out there, it may make you think of Michael Pekka, but it's like, you know... 41, you're like, no, I'm not thinking of anybody, right? So yeah, that has to be a special number.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't Jocelyn Thibault 41, but he was in the blue and gold by that point anyway.
Yeah, but I'd rather not go down that path. Like, I know you and producer Jeff are obsessed that it's goalie week, but there was a rough stretch there where a lot of name goalies were the backups in Buffalo, and not a lot of guys could win. So that was frustrating. So I don't really want to go down that path.
I say yes. I don't want to blame those goalies because I feel like...
I'm not
like
blaming them either.
But there was a transition where Millsy was really, really good, and that's the only way they could win games. And if he wasn't good, you know, the transition and the start of where we are right now in this drought was happening.
No, this was before that. No, I'm talking way before. Talking like
09, 10, well, 10 even 11, 11.
Go back 12. To Rollison. He didn't have hardly any regulation wins. He didn't even play that many games for a guy that we think of a lot in Sabres history.
He had a huge, huge playoff win, game one of the Eastern Conference Final. And even Steve Shields, you look at his career numbers.
I know.
Steve Shields did not play that many games, but he did have the playoff series, and he had a couple of fights, and it becomes where you're like, Steve Shields must have been here for 8 years.
Uh-huh.
No, he was not. Dwayne Rolson must have been here for that. Andrei Trefilov, like you think of Trefilov, you're thinking, man, he was here forever. No, he wasn't. Like, it's just, that's really where you're at when you look at those type of goaltenders.
Trefilov played 25 games with the Sabres. He won 8, which is 8 more than Bob Essensa.
Yeah, well, Bob struggled.
Like, seriously. It was just ridiculous. Some guys that just couldn't pick up a win.
Yes, and you need
it. Here's another one.
You needed those wins from backup goaltenders.
Ty Conklin won 1 game as a Sabre. He was here
but
he only played five. I know, but still.
I beat him. Last game of the season, a game in Philadelphia, the Sabres came in. They had already wrapped up the President's Trophy, so Ty Coughlin played. That game cost me $2,500 because, you know, it's you play your former team for the first time. You put money on the board. That cost me a good team dinner or something.
Tebow won 3 out of the 12 that he played. Patty Laline only won 9 despite the number of games that he played, which was 47.
Wow.
You know, like, that was tough. And so
some people would think
that was the era that I'm really focused on.
Yeah, but some people would think that Rolly and Shields and those type of goalies were here longer than, you know, Mika Noronen or Tom Draper or Craig Anderson, but no. Mm-hmm. They were not. Like, those guys all played more games than, you know, than the Trefilov and the Laline and the Shields and the Rolly. And so it's interesting when you actually look at the numbers, how some names that you remember because of significant moments, especially because it's goalie week. But, you know, there's other goalies that have played a lot more games.
I must say, thinking back now to Patrick Laline and I must have had really good luck 1 week.
You saw a lot of games.
Well, so spent a fair amount of time with
Patty. Went 9-26-5.
I know.
With
but
the
get
Sabres.
This.
Come on, Patty.
Get this. In the 9-10 season, which was Miller's Vezina win and the Sabres division win, I took Izzy, my oldest daughter, out of kindergarten, probably. It's my guess. I think she was only 4 at this time, maybe just turned 5. Took her down to Buffalo for 3 or 4 days, and saw the Sabres in succession defeat Chicago and Washington, with Lalim getting a 38-save win over the Blackhawks, who would go on to win the Stanley Cup, and Miller defeating the Capitals, who would win the President's Trophy that year. Like, it was a great week, and it ended
that
up
That cost Patty Lalim some money, too, because he had played for Chicago. So see what happens is, like, when there's money on the board, it draws this man, the guys want to win, and they want to beat your former team. You want to beat your former team. So that's money on the board right there. But, man, I love how you remember that game against Chicago as a 38-save, like, performance by Patty Lalim.
Well, we are only going to see two goalies on the opening night roster for the Sabres, right? Is that your prediction?
Yes. And look, I mean, Luukkonen, Lyon, and Levi, to me, in, like, what is it? We're the 12th, so on the 15th, 16th, when camp opens, like 2 weeks from now, when camp is going to open or be close to open, they're going to be the main focus in camp when you look at goaltenders and seeing how the six preseason games are going to be split up, who's performing well, but not just in preseasons, in practice. But I really believe it's for the better of everybody, the better of Luukkonen, the better of Lyon, the better of Levi, if you start the season with two goalies, most likely Luukkonen and Lyon, in Buffalo, and Levi in Rochester, with one of Tapias Lennonen or Scott Ratzlaff, whatever. Like, those two may be interchangeable between Rochester and Jacksonville. So, but everybody's got to have their spot. Mm-hmm. And if you start the season with three goalies on the roster, that's because something bad happened. And I'm not saying maybe Levi goes out and outplays everybody. But outplaying everybody and something bad happening is two different things. Even if Levi outplays everybody, I don't think that you're starting the year saying, here's the keys to the castle, Devin, because you have Luukkonen, you have Lyon, you just made those moves. I think that if something really bad happens in camp where Luukkonen is looking really, really bad, or Lyon is looking bad, and it's worst case scenario, then you would have three probably on the roster. But I don't anticipate three goalies to start the season in Buffalo at all, at least for the first month. And then, well, you got to win games. So in November, everything's on the table if you're not winning games.
Just to go back to my trip to Buffalo in December of 2009.
Did you pull the game sheet?
Miller started those two games that I saw. He had a 35-save shutout against the Capitals, and then Lalim only gives up one on 39. It was like a Wednesday Friday deal.
Yeah.
I'm like, so good.
That is a really good stretch. Anyway. But it wasn't a throwback Thursday, Duffer.
No,
so they wouldn't have worn the black and red on
No, but it
might have
been
Friday.
An 8 p.m. Friday.
I think by that point they were done.
Yeah,
I don't think they were. I think this was 8 p.m. Fridays was a 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006,
right,
maybe. And then they went, no, we're not doing that anymore.
Okay. Anything else Sabre-y that you want to, you know?
Well,
I mean, maybe you interact with so many people. Like, it was a long weekend. Like, maybe you ran into somebody that prompted yet another discussion about this upcoming season, of which we are less than 3 weeks away to the opening of the preseason.
Yep.
And more than a month away from the start of the regular season.
Now, the only Sabres-related news that actually happened this morning is Samuel Milosz, who is a goalie that was drafted by the Sabres in the fourth round this past year. He plays in Rouyn-Noranda in the Quebec Maritimes Junior Hockey League. I keep saying Quebec Major, but it's not Quebec Major anymore. It's Quebec Maritimes Junior Hockey League. He has announced his commitment to Northeastern University on Instagram. So, look, he's going to play in the Q again this year, which will be his third season in the Q. So I think that he's probably thinking, I'm going to play a third year. He's played one game 2 years ago, but, you know, in 3 years, and then probably go to college at the start of the 26-27 season, or maybe even the 27-28 season. Because we know now a lot of those, especially for goalies, I think that's a great idea to have the ability to play Canadian juniors and then continue on and play college and continue on to your development. So he's just announced Northeastern. So that is a, you know, a Sabres worthy type of news. But obviously Samuel Milosz, if he factors into anything with the Sabres, it's probably 5, 6, 7 years down the road. So yes, that's what it is.
Okay. We have long wanted like a little picture in picture on our show of the control room. The looks from producer Jeff today warrant his own single, you know, square today, like the head tilts and there's a great energy that we're feeding off.
Can we put it right here in my screen, like right over there? Like, okay.
Well, he also shared with us through Chris Baker at Sabres Prospects that Radim Mertke had a nice Five Nations event with his home nation as well. As you know, the Czechs got some significant offense from him. So as always, follow Chris for the latest on international play, North American play, when it pertains to Sabres prospects. And, you know, Mertke will be one to watch when this all gets going here in, well, I mean, the rookies are here on the 10th and 11th, really.
Yeah.
You know, the prospects challenge actually begins on the 11th before the Sabres play their first game on the 12th.
Yeah, so Radim Mertke, this may be something that over the last few days, right, golf tournaments, the Sabres alumni golf tournament, the Rochester Americans alumni golf tournament, that people have been asking about, hey, how's that first round pick that the Sabres had? And I'm very excited to see in person how is skating, how the size, how it all factors in. So he's probably the first one, right, at Prospect Challenge that I'm going to be wanting to see. How is he able to make the steps towards like, oh, this could be a player on the blue line that will have an impact for the Sabres. There's other, prospects that are going to be there, Constellanius and others that I'm going to be paying attention to. But that was a question I got a lot over the last week. You know, when it comes to prospects and draft picks, is Radim Mertke and what he will bring to the Sabres. But more like probably not as long as goalie prospects, but I think that Mertke is probably another 4 years away, maybe even 5 years away from being a full-time Sabres. Like, we're not talking the next couple of years, and then he'll probably go to Rochester. We talked about that. They have a lot of defense prospect that are probably ahead of them on what it is, the depth chart right now.
Well, unconfirmed, but your story about Milosz served as a good reminder that he is likely to be what I believe to be one of five goalies that will be there for rookie camp. And then when you look at Mertke on the blue line, I think he by far will garner the attention based on recency bias and draft status. But I know you've been wanting to see the next step after good time put in so far in Rochester for the likes of Komarov and Novikov. Mm-hmm. I think those two, to me, would be focal points when not only for them individually, but just like, let's see where Mertke is at just beside them. You know, and how they can play off of each other in these Prospects Challenge games.
And Novikov now 2 years in the AHL with Rochester. Yeah. Sevi Komarov 1 year pro. So yeah, where is Mertke compared to those two defensemen, which I really feel are two that I think would be getting their kind of I don't want to say appearance, but They deserve a look, a longer look through Prospect Challenge, through the Sabres training camp,
right,
some preseason games, and let's really see how they've grown from being, you know, 18, 19 when they got drafted to now 21, 22, 23, and what that difference, that 4 year difference is between a Mertke and a Novikov or a Mertke and a Sevi Komarov. So I really feel that those two are going to be, again, the blue line for me. It's where it's at because we all know Dahlin, we know Byron, we know Power. They got Kessel ring. But in a few years from now, if your team defense doesn't get improved, there will be some opportunities. There will be some openings for some of those guys to step in.
Well, I know it feels like maybe to us, maybe to you, that, you know, we couldn't stop talking about the defense core, especially after Kesselring and before Byram got finalized and then ultimately when it did. But it is September. It's worth revisiting that we will obviously be looking significantly at Dahlin, Power, Byram, and their partners. But you have Connor Timmins coming in as well. But you've never seen, so you've never seen Timmins as a Saber. Nope. You've never seen Kesselring as a Saber. Mm-hmm. If Zach Jones like makes the seven, right? Yeah. Like if
that would
if,
be the Bryson if, Jones, like battle.
Yeah, like do they keep eight? Camp. Do they keep seven? Like if Jones goes ahead of well, we haven't seen Jones either. And then we haven't seen Mertka. And like, I know you're not really wanting to believe it, especially based on just mentioning all those names, but I'm sorry, but if Mertka has like an all world preseason and everything, like why wouldn't he deserve to get some games? Honestly. Oh.
I get what you're saying, but I look at Radim Mertka, I'm thinking 18 years old, big guy at 6'6", not the biggest, like in term of strength and full body development yet, that look, he could come in and really play well, and that would be great for the Sabres, but the numbers are not there for Radim Mertka to say, hey, you're going to come in and play. And if you were to play, you're probably playing, you know, as a 5'6" defenseman, and
wouldn't that be
maybe
cool?
It's a good experience.
Give me Mertka on an all-world preseason coming in and playing on as the number six. Like, I'm sorry, I get, like, maybe it's because the calendar just turned, but, like, this makes me really excited. I want to see what he does in the Prospects Challenge and the preseason if he gets a bunch of games.
I think that it's a little bit of rainbows and unicorns and, you know, the dreaming of, here it is. Thank you. In the control room, there's our beautiful unicorn running across.
First one of the month. There.
First one of the month. But I just don't see it. I actually was looking at the draft list from this year, and I think there could be only one that could start on a roster, and that's Schaefer, Matthew Schaefer with the New York Islanders. And maybe by Christmas, the World Juniors happen and he goes back to juniors after that. I don't think any of the players drafted are going to finish the season on an NHL roster, the ones drafted this year. I just
prediction
don't see it happening.
Marty.
Yeah. There's always somebody
Marty
that surprises
says class
down
of 2025, not ready.
Not ready. But there's always one player that surprises, right? An 8th overall pick, a 10th overall pick, a 5th overall pick that you're like, oh, this guy's going to make the team right out of camp. So it could happen. I just don't see it happening this year.
Any idea?
Yeah, producer Jeff says, you know, Benson did. And it was like, oh, who would have thought Benson was going to just come in and make the team, right?
Guy's a veteran top line player now.
He is a top line left winger. That's the way it goes.
He might be. These things, you know, will be determined through the course of his play and, of course, the Sabres during the preseason, but certainly a body of work shown last year by Benson in that position. And with change, i.e. moving Paterka, there's definitely opportunity here for Benson and others, which is why you should get excited about the preseason, yes, which is just about 20 days away. Now, team of the day is St. Louis. Give us your ultimate tease about the Blues, and then we'll dive in after the break.
Somehow I've got a strong connection with the Blues personally. When I held out in the 2000, 2001 season, my very first game coming back from my holdout was in St. Louis against the Blues. My very last NHL appearance was against the Blues with the Rangers. I retired after that, didn't finish that game. And Duffer, you and I have a special connection to a trip to St. Louis, which we'll talk about after the break. So yeah, there's a lot of personal connection to the St. Louis Blues. Don't know why, but it just happens that way. Oh, my first ever preseason game, Duffer. How did I forget? We're talking preseason, whatever. My first ever preseason game was in the odd. Training camp in 1995 was against the St. Louis Blues.
Who was your best defenseman that night?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if like maybe another 18-year-old kid like just happened to steal the spotlight or something. Because that would be cool.
No, maybe Jamie Key played, and he was one that got a lot of action that year in preseason. But I don't remember. All I know is Chris Pronger took a shot from the far blue line and almost scored.
Oh, boy.
he had a bomb.
And what happened? How did you recover to make the save?
It skipped right in front of me. Like, it was one of those skippers, and I went butterfly, and it toggled like a pinball machine between my knees, and slowly sneaked in behind, which I dove behind it, behind me. It wasn't from the far blue line, but it was not inside the red line. It was maybe between the blue and the red, but from the far side of the ice.
Goals can happen from anywhere on the ice or on the street, and we want you to sign up for Hockey Fest today because it too is fast approaching and is the deadline because we want you to get in signed up. It's all part of FanFest. This is the all-ages street hockey tournament in conjunction with Sabres FanFest. It happens on Saturday, September 13th. All skill levels welcome. Visit sabres.com/hockeyfest to sign up your team today. Our team of the day is the Blues. We'll talk about them next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Scores! The captain, Michael Pekka!
Seneca, the miraculous save!
Now do you believe? You don't want to miss Throwback Thursday.
We were mandated by the league here in Goalie Week to show a snippet of the winningest goaltender in Sabres history. Ryan Miller inviting everyone and encouraging.
We saw some Dominic Hasek too.
Yes.
A little Hasek with the blocker
save. Throwback Thursdays, learn all about it at Sabres.com. That's going to be part of a huge part, really, of the Black and Red schedule this year. And again, all those games and their opponents and start times, it's all available at Sabres.com. And Ryan Miller, of course, went to the St. Louis Blues from Buffalo.
That's right.
Our team of the day. And I'm going to try not to get upset.
But I was at that game, Duffer.
Of course you
that
were.
That day that Millsy got traded.
Yeah, but you're no Ryan Vince, so.
No, but I was walking into the building, and there's the whole buzz or whatever. Like, you know, Miller got traded, and Enrot was going to start against the San Jose Sharks, which were a really good team with Joel Thornton.
Sabres won.
The Sabres did win, but then Ryan Vince ended up having to back up, which was awesome. So you talk a Miller connection. I mentioned my very first preseason game in the camp of 1995 was at the odd against the St. Louis Blues. I do have confirmation. Look, this is a hockey card, Duffer. That was from that game. And look at the sleeve, a blue and red and gold or yellow sleeve that is in the background. So that was that game. That was taken then. That was my hockey card. That was a rookie card from Pinnacle.
In that Ryan Miller trade, the Blues also acquired an assistant coach.
Ian
Steve Ott. Ott?
Steve Ott, not Ian Ott. Ian used to work for us. Same difference.
Again, this is so off. I was just, you know, mentioning in the first half hour, like that 2010, 2009, 2010 yes. trip with Izzy, who was five at the time. Well, fast forward to the night of the Miller trade. She's, I don't know, probably 13 or 14, I guess. The picture, she was at the game. Oh. The text read, "Your daughter is not happy." Oh. And the picture of this look, which of course, upon self-reflection, looked an awful lot like how I would get.
Yes.
At times when I was an adult.
It was a snapshot into your own soul.
Oh,
right
my
there.
Goodness.
Obviously, anyway. Like that would have been you as a kid when, you know, somebody got traded that you liked on the Sabres and Ryan
Barrasso or Don Edwards.
Oh,
or,
yeah. Milsey was so loved, right, for so many years. And from the time he even was loved, like in the lockout year of 04, 05, when he played for Rochester, a lot of Buffalo fans fled to Rochester, got to know him. 05, 06, great season. 06, 07, President's Trophy. There was, you know, the Olympics in 2010, there was so much to love about Milsey that it was one of the biggest fan favorite in Saberhood. Like it was, there's definitely some big time players, right? The Gilbert and the Danny Gare and, you know, but Ryan Miller is up on that Mount Rushmore of fan favorites over the years.
Okay, St. Louis is the team of the day. I'll try to do this quick so it affords you more time to talk about what is ahead for St. Louis this year. But the Blues last year landed in wild card 2.
Yes.
After winning game 82 against Utah, 6-1. This, incredibly, was on the heels of a 3-game losing streak that was on the heels of a 12-game winning streak, which it made it look like they were going to be home and cool. And then they stubbed their toe 3 straight times with incredible drama working against them, including Connor Brown scoring for the Oilers in the final minute of regulation to rob them of a point. And then they would go on to lose in a shootout the next game, robbing them of another possible point. So it literally came down to their final game. And then wouldn't you know it, they're up against the best team in the league, Winnipeg, to start the playoffs. They go down 0-2, they go up in the series, and they are up in game 7, 3-1, with 2 minutes left in the game.
Unbelievable.
And they lost. And here we sit talking about the St. Louis Blues.
And they had a chance in overtime too. It's not just like they lost, like they had their chance in overtime and they could not get it done.
What a team, what a winning streak, what incredible play against the Jets, and only to have it in the most heartbreaking fashion, losing not only a 2-goal lead in the final 2 minutes, but the game tire with just a couple of seconds to go in regulation before falling in overtime. But maybe what we saw down the stretch and in that wild first round is what the Blues will be, a team that is better than what they looked like for much of the year, that gets a full season from Jim Montgomery as head coach, runs it back with, and oh, by the way, in that 12-game winning streak, Robert Thomas led the NHL for almost a month in scoring. He had 23 points in 12 games. Incredibly, though, and this maybe kind of snuck into the Blues there with that late 3-game losing streak, in game 11 of the 12-game winning streak, Dylan Holloway got hurt. His season
that was bad.
And his season came to an end. And he should be healthy to start the season, but boy, did they miss him. And every team had injuries, so that's not a reason.
But Winnipeg, the season that Holloway had, like after a summer of, man, the two offer sheets, right? The Broberg and Holloway offer sheet. He comes through with 26 goals and 63 points in the season, and he gets hurt and cannot play the rest of the year. So that was big. But they somehow got a college replacement in Jimmy Snuggerud, who was really good and now playing in his first full year, could be seeing himself top line with Robert Thomas because they were good together. So Yeah, they lost all the way, but Snuggerud got in and performed well. So now it gives the Blues even more ammunition. I think the Blues are 100-plus points this year. They went from 92, missed out on the playoffs, to 96, getting in on the last day, to now this year going to be over 100 points. Jim Montgomery is a great coach. Montgomery was 35-18-7 this year with the Blues, right? Mm-hmm. But in the last 27 games, you mentioned the three-game losing streak, he went 24-3. Mm-hmm. That is where he put his stamp on the team. After a little break for the Four Nations, he came back and really had that team dialed up for the stretch to make the playoffs. Jordan Binnington played better. I think there was a little bit of that stress about going to the Four Nations. Will I be the guy after the Four Nations? He was great. I think he'll be a lot better this year. So, yeah, I look at the Blues as being a team that is going to be over 100 points in the Western Conference this year.
It's you still, I do, clearly, have a hard time saying how impactful Broberg and Holloway were. Mm-hmm. Like, their starts to their respective NHL careers over the 2 and 3 prior seasons were middling at best. Mm-hmm. And for them to have the courage to go and sign them. Now the trick is they got to sign the next deals for yes. both of them. The good news for the Blues, like everyone else, is the cap's going up. So it shouldn't be a real problem. But I will say this, that they do in many ways look quite different. They have a core of players for sure that feel like they've been there a long time and contractually are going to be there a while as well. But when Snuggerud comes in as a top line player, which he will, and when you get a second year of Holloway and a second year of Broberg and a first year of Pugh Suter and improved play, especially in that winning streak from Jake Neighbors, really good season from Jordan Kyrou, like there's a lot to like. But honestly, one big area the last couple of years that has been talked about, and when it wasn't going well, remember, the threat was from Armstrong, like they're going to get rid of every possible veteran contract that they could.
And that's why the rumors were rabid. Like it was Kyrou's going to get traded and you know, you've got...
But in season, at the deadline,
Marty, Parayko, like it was like everybody.
If they didn't get hot, as you said, coming out of Four Nations, they wouldn't have had the chance to have a 12-game winning streak.
No, yeah.
And so anyway, I just want to stress here that one of still the quieter acquisitions is Cam Fowler. Mm-hmm. From the moment he became a St. Louis Blue, he was in the top 10 in defense scoring in the NHL. He had 10 points in the first 6 games of round 1 of the playoffs. He had a 6-game point streak. He got blanked in game 7.
Yeah.
But you could look at this very long career of Cam Fowler and not need to convince yourself too much that this was the best season, NHL season, of Cam Fowler's career. And
remember, like when you said, do I still see the black and red players and think of the old players? When I see Cam Fowler in a St. Louis Blues jersey, mm-hmm. it's almost like he's been there forever. Like, I don't think of Cam Fowler, the Anaheim Ducks. I think, Cam Fowler, you're a St. Louis Blues. Like, that, you fit that mold, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because I always thought of Fowler, kind of a Petrangelo type of player, and then Petrangelo with St. Louis moved on to Vegas, whatnot. But what he did alongside Colton Parayko mm-hmm. was putting that top pair of defensemen together and allowed Broberg to really get themselves going. And I love Philip Broberg, even when he was with the Edmonton Oilers, despite the fact that, as you mentioned, their career was just middling, but I always thought there was something there. It really made the Blues a different team with Fowler. And really, we talked Jim Montgomery as a coach, but for the first few games of Montgomery as a head coach, it was just okay. And then it really took off after. And maybe that's Fowler influence mm-hmm. right there. I really feel there was a big influence. Now, moving to next year, they added, I feel, some really good pieces. Pugh Suter as a UFA, Nick Bjugstad as a UFA. And then they traded for Logan Mailloux of the Montreal Canadiens, a defenseman. And I think Mailloux is going to be a full-time NHL player this year. So not only did you just add two UFAs and a defenseman on a trade, but really all you lost was Nick Leddy to waivers, Ryan Suter is getting older, and Zach Bolduc that you traded to Montreal. Like, I don't think that they gave up a lot to add those three pieces to an already good team that was put together.
You're absolutely entitled to your own opinion, but I think Montrealers are going to say that they won the trade getting Bolduc.
Yes, and really, the way I look at it is, one-for-one Bolduc for Mailloux, I think Montreal won. But Nick Leddy went on waivers, and Ryan Suter was older, and they just let him walk. So really, all they gave up is Bolduc and added Suter, Bukestad, and Mailloux. That way, St. Louis won their offseason and saying, from what we lost and what we gained more.
Well, the one thing the Blues were not good at last year was the penalty kill. They were 27th. They were very similar to Buffalo in that they had a high shooting percentage. They finished 8th in the NHL in that regard, just a whisker behind Buffalo, who was tied for 5th.
Penalty kill got worse with Jim Montgomery.
Well, so this is the thing. Last line of penalty kill and everything else is goaltending, Binnington and Hofer. This is where it's interesting. Their 5-on-5 save percentage was in the top 10. Their penalty kill was not good, and that's what kind of skewed some things and made it harder for them to make the playoffs, perhaps, than it should have.
The 6-on-5 wasn't good either when you look at the end of Game 7 against the Winnipeg Jets. So, yes,
my gosh. Yeah.
That's like a power play right there. But, yeah,
but do you like the tandem, and what are your expectations?
I like the tandem. I actually had Joel Ofer as a guy that if I was a team looking for a goaltender that maybe is ready to take a transition, like an Anthony Stolarz that the Leafs did with last year, it would have been Joel Ofer. But the St. Louis Blues did not want to move him. They re-signed him, everything. But Binnington was 29th in the league in goals saved above expectation. Ofer was 45th. So the numbers are like, you know what? If you're not top 20, are you that good of a goaltender? But 5-on-5, as you pointed out, they were great penalty kill. Maybe not so much on the goaltenders in the way that they played and were giving up a lot of grade A chances. But I do feel that 5-on-5, they gave up 12 less goals than expected. That's because goaltending was there. They were ninth in expected goals against, but they still performed much better. So they were one of the top 5 team in goals against 5-on-5 this year.
What was Marty's best from a long weekend? That's next on Sabres Live.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
You have a great memory, Marty Biron, and we unearthed a photo of you and me together in St. Louis back in your early days of joining our broadcast crew. Thankfully, there's no timestamp on this photo. As far as time of day, we'll let you wonder.
It was only 3:07 Central. Not in the afternoon. It was 4:07 Eastern a.m. So, yeah, we after the game, I was filling in for Brad May because he had some prior things. So I went with you on the road, St. Louis. We ended up at a little jazz club, a little late night. We were starving by that point. And the hotel casino we were at had some late night food. So we ended up ordering some food at like 3 a.m. or something. It was
Jordan
great.
And Al, guilty by association here in this picture.
Young Jordan LaBarber on the
26 on NHLers in history born on this day. None of them Sabres, but allow me to say happy birthday to Alexander Barkov and Eetu Luostarinen, both of the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers.
Happy birthday to another goalie, Keanu Reeves, who's 61 today. He is a goalie. Now, he played in Young Blood, but he was actually a goalie as well. So, yeah. So goalie week, Keanu Reeves is 61. And yes, just, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. If you're not watching, you have a phone, whatever. But Jessica Pegula is cruising in right now in the quarter. She already won the first set and up 4-1 in the second. So she'd be playing, if everything goes well for the rest of this match, she'd be playing the winner of Sabalenka and Vondrousova in the semi in a couple of days.
It just made me laugh thinking about the sports update on WGR Sports Radio 550. Imagine if the top of the hour every time they come on.
Don't want to ruin it for you.
And then they proceed to tell you anyway.
I know Shayna Goldman was on this show. She'd be saying, like, don't say anything. I've got it taped. I want to watch it. But yes.
You got 30 seconds for best, probably just best of the weekend.
Okay, best. Well, I'm going to stick with tennis, right? Because Venus Williams and Leila Fernandez in double, it's been great. Serena Williams is jealous because Venus said Leila has been my best doubles partner since Serena. But anyway, that was fun. Felix Auger-Aliassime, for all you Canadians tennis fans, he's been doing awesome. And Duffer, the worst is I got stung by two bees this weekend and it's still swelling up.
Oh, put some ice on it and rejoin us tomorrow for Sabres Live. We'll see you then.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.